We are learning village life. We are now growing crops, building houses, and we now grow enough rice to feed everyone in our village. I am very proud because now, with better nutrition, my grandchildren are much taller than me already.
War decimated the landscape of Vietnam, forcing those who live there to develop a whole new relationship to the land. You're listening to the Nature Stories podcast. I'm Samantha Brown. This podcast is curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. We bring you pieces each week about the intersection of people and place. Up now, an excerpt from The Price of Rice, produced and narrated by Stephanie Geyer-Stevens with Outer Voices.
I really began to understand that the story of the environment in Vietnam is really understanding the story of the aftermath of war, the environmental devastation of war. And that I hadn't really thought about that before. So I went to Vietnam and Laos in the summer of 2007 and 2008. And I went there in order to meet Tran Thi Long, who is the founder of SPERI, which is the Social Policy Ecological Research Institute, because of all the work that she's done on environmental issues. She seemed like the perfect person to really lead me into an understanding of the situation with the price of rice in Vietnam.
My name is Tran Thi Long. I'm from the center part of Vietnam. The village name is Tu Mỹ. Tu, it means for. Mỹ, it means beauty.
So when we fighting against American and we win over, and the whole country in the world is all Vietnam is number one.
I also didn't really understand how much I didn't understand about the Vietnam War. That was a big one. And the aftermath of war. I mean, we've been working in Southeast Asia for all these years, and so by default, we've been working in the aftermath of war. But I really saw it entirely differently in this piece by looking at it through the lens of the environment of the country. Everybody's tone of voice changed a lot when they started talking about the impact of the war, the impact that Agent Orange has had on their kids and on their cropland.
Forest and nature, you see that like dioxin and then bombing is disgusting nature. Looking at ourselves, we are exhausting. You know, all our efforts is finished. People become very, very tired. You know, nature, diversity, bombing, and everywhere is bombing. The country, I think, very, very exhausting. And then we start to think about how to regenerate nature, education, everything together.
Since the American War ended, Vietnam has been completely depending on chemical agriculture to sort of jolt it into the global economy, which it's done at this fantastic rate. But in the process, you know, the land has really suffered and the people have as well. Long's organization, SPERI, steps in, and her goal is to find an alternative, to say, is there a way that we can create land use practices for Vietnam and for the region that are sustainable, that aren't relying on chemical fertilizer, that are making use of traditional practices and that can really support people so that they can feed themselves. Is that economically viable as well?
And they kill all the grasses by through Asian orange. Yeah.
We're on our way with Tuan. He's our guide and our translator from Sperry. He is an amazing multilingual anthropologist who spends all of his time working in the field with ethnic people in Vietnam and in Laos.
This road, is this Ho Chi Minh Trail?
Yes, Ho Chi Minh Trail and the community.
We're driving on the Ho Chi Minh Trail. During the American War, the communist troops travel along here carrying weapons, and the people to the south along the Laos-Cambodia border. Because the Ho Chi Minh Trail goes through here, there were terrible fighting here in Quang Chin, and all the grasses were killed from Agent Orange.
So here we are, we're on our way to visit the Maliang village, and Tuan points out to me that the Maliang were living in the very mountains that were the most heavily bombed, you know, by napalm and Agent Orange. This was absolutely devastating to their food supply. For the past many decades, they've lived a very marginal existence until fairly recently, when the Vietnamese government resettled them into this one village. And now they're learning how to grow gardens in one spot, and that's new information for them. So now we're arriving at the homeland of the Maliang. This is the Maliang village. This is K Village. In order to get there, though, we have to cross a river. Is that the boat we're taking? The Vietnamese government had offered to the Maliang to build a bridge. And the Maliang had said, no, we don't want a bridge. So instead, they have a boat. So the river that we just crossed is the Ca Tang River. And we're now in the K Village, which is home to about 70 families of the Maliang. There's a total of about 1,400 Maliang still living in Vietnam. There's probably another 1,000 living in Cambodia. It's July, and it's hot. It's so hot. And everything is entirely still. And the only sound is the cicadas. We meet the village leader. His name is Cao Zum, and he is the head of the clan that lives at K Village. Cao Zum is well shy of 5 feet tall. He's wearing a striped Western-style dress shirt and black dress pants and bare feet.
My name is Cao Zum. I'm the Maliang people. I'm a village leader of K Village and also the member of the district or communal council. We are the Maliang people. In the past, we used to live in the mountains at the top of the stream, in the caves, in the forest. We were nomadic people living in the mountains between Vietnam, Cambodia, and Laos.
When people are resettled, it can be a completely devastating situation, agriculturally, culturally, economically, socially, on every level.
The government moved us down to a flat area at the bottom of the mountains. Of course, we were thankful to the government, but it wasn't easy for us to live there. Before, we generally did slash and burn cultivation, but now we have to learn a new way of production, so it is more difficult for us.
When a group of people are moved out of a place that they've lived for many, many years into a new place, they don't know necessarily how to grow food in that new place. They don't know where to find food. They can't build the same houses that they're accustomed to. They don't have any relationships with the neighbors or with the neighboring communities. It can be an almost impossible equation.
But the problem wasn't just how they grow their food. When the Vietnamese government moved the milling, they built them concrete houses. They didn't know that the milling house was built in a very special way. And if the house wasn't built in that style, they would not be able to live in it. The house is the core of their whole culture. It is extremely sophisticated design that determines their whole family relationships and their relationships with their ancestors. The poles of the house were chosen by the house owner. The pole chosen for the center is considered a spiritual pole. This pole can only be cut from a tree that has never been cut before, that is still alive, and that is completely without branches for the length which is used for the core of the house. This is the pole that the dead used to climb from the floor up to the roof and then out of the house.
Sperry took the time to figure out what it was that the Malyang people really needed. And that made all the difference. All of a sudden, resettlement not only became possible, it became a good thing, at least for the Malyang here in this village.
Then Sperry came to help us learn sustainable agriculture techniques, and this is working very, very well for us. So now we have learned wet rice production. It's very good because we have more yield, which ensures more food for our village. We are learning village life. We are now growing crops, building houses, and we now grow enough rice to feed everyone in our village. I am very proud because now, with better nutrition, my grandchildren are much taller than me already.
As we're leaving the village, as we walk down the path back down to the river, two men appeared carrying a paddle. And as we got into the canoe, one of them got into the back of the boat and paddled us back across the river.
That excerpt came from The Price of Rice, produced and narrated by Stephanie Geyer-Stevens with Outer Voices. To hear the rest of this piece or to hear more pieces like it, go to the Public Radio Exchange at prx.org. Support for this podcast comes from the Nature Conservancy, online at nature.org/stories, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown. Join us next week for a brand new Nature Stories podcast.